The Lord be with you. I figured I needed to adjust this. If I have to deal with this intimidating microphone, I need the lectern at my height at least. So, last week I spent about 10 straight hours at the casino. I wasn't gambling. I was doing my volunteer hours as a good Alberta citizen, helping support our schools, carrying chips at the Argyle Casino. And really, there's not a lot to do as a chip runner. If you ever have to volunteer at a casino, ask for the job chip runner, and it will be taken quite quickly. So I had a lot of time where I just wandered around the casino, bored and checking things out. The highlight of the day for me, and maybe this is just for me, one of the pit boss ladies said to me, "How many times a day do people tell you that you look exactly like James McAvoy?" I said, "Oh, never, but thank you. Thank you very much. That is a very handsome Scotsman that you are comparing me to." Here's the funny thing. Every time I went into the washroom, I don't need to tell you how many times that was, but every time I went into the washroom, there was somebody in there, and they were either mumbling, or they were ranting, or they were shouting, or they were talking to no one in particular. One time, this guy stormed through the door, and I'm going to heavily paraphrase what he said. "These fabulous machines are not working correctly, and I am not having a very good day." Just out of nowhere. And another guy muttered while he was washing his hands right next to me, "When am I going to catch a break?" And throughout the day, I would hear people in the halls chatting with one another, commiserating together. It was the fellowship of the gamers, making their silent prayers and petitions and their not-so-silent prayers and petitions to the gods of luck and money. In its own way, a casino is a sort of shrine, right? And those bathroom stalls were little private prayer rooms where the gathered faithful performed their rituals with very human, very normal, very reasonable hearts full of hope and longing, looking forward to the big payday, the big payout. When is it ever going to happen? It's Advent for gamblers. And I would think in the back of the gambler's mind is the chance that maybe there isn't going to be that big payout. Maybe they're going to go home with empty pockets and a heavy heart and a stomach full of that bad food they sell at the casino. Now, we're not at the casino today, but we are the gathered faithful here with our own hearts full of hope and longing. Advent hope that anticipates the coming of our Lord. It's a hope full of longing for restoration and healing. Even as we name these days and light these candles, if we're honest with ourselves, there is a part of us that still asks, what is the arrival of the Lord going to look like? How is this all going to work out? We're hopeful for good things, peace and joy and love, even as we practice them and even as we don't practice them. During Advent, we're mostly practicing holy waiting. We meditate on the mysteries and the promises and the surprises of God's arrival in our world. The Hebrew Bible draws to a close with one big final book that they call the 12. And as it appears in our Christian Bibles, we just call them the minor prophets. Now, just to be clear, minor had nothing to do with whether or not it was important or respected. It's because they were short works, not trivial works. And boy, pound for pound, those books could pack a real punch. Now, spanning about 400 years of history, This patchwork of voices spoke to the ages and stages of Israel's development and Judah's development. They spoke against religious hypocrisy, spiritual complacency. They declared judgment sometimes. They exposed corruption. Other times they named the ways that people would be punished for their wickedness, often calling for justice and mercy, but sometimes predicting the arrival of an army. But then after all the tears and woe, after all the armies had come and gone, the prophets also spoke words of restoration. They spoke words of hope. Today we are in the book of Malachi, and the prophet foretells the day when the religious community, especially all those good people in church, would finally be made right. For our Advent purposes in this season, the lectionary gives us these minor prophets to work with because they were the ones anticipating this day of the arrival of the Lord, the time when everything would be put right and the Lord of hosts would arrive in power, bringing justice and might and restoration. This Sunday, we are at the point of the story where the prophet anticipates the day of God's great revealing. God's people had known exile, they had witnessed destruction, they had endured the brutality of empires, and they were ready for some good news. And so, like a voice in the wilderness, we hear today's passage. "See, I'm sending my messenger to prepare the way for me, and the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come into his temple." The gathered people in the house of God would receive a visit from the maker of everything, the big payout to end all payouts. And the Lord will arrive in power and might, setting things right and cleansing the nation. Now, in one sense, that sounds like a pretty good deal. I mean, if we know who the bad guys are and we know where the evil is, it seems so obvious and so simple that we could ask God to kick down the door and start dishing out double helpings of divine punishment if we know who the bad guys are. This theological perspective is really as old as religion itself. And really, it's an alive and well in many forms in our world right now, where God is really just our heavenly pest control service. And people who we should be calling neighbors are the pests. What's amazing, though, is the prophet doesn't let us go there, even for a second. And in a profound display of theological maturity and insight, he asks, "Who can endure the day of his coming? And who can stand when he appears?" And that's a pretty fair question, and maybe it's the question that's in the back of our minds nagging at us. What if all that evil isn't just our enemies? What if the bad stuff isn't just a few bad eggs? What if it's actually right at the core of who I am? It's nesting there in the hearts of the gathered faithful ones, even in the house of the Lord. Who can stand when he appears? Now, when I was reading for this passage, I knew a thing or two about smelting, refining metals to make a pure, more valuable bar of silver or gold or something like that. What I didn't know about was fuller's soap. Did anyone notice that in the passage? Fuller's soap? No, I didn't know what fuller's soap. Is that a brand? Did they have a brand of soap back in ancient days? No, there was not. This was not a brand. In the pre-industrial era, we still needed to make textiles. We still needed to make cloths. In Europe, the fuller was the person also known as a tucker or a walker. Anyone know someone with the last name Fuller, Tucker, or Walker? You might have a clue what their ancestors did for a living. Anyways, this was the worker who did one of the final steps in the production of woolen cloth. If you look at your bulletin, there's a picture of some 18th century Scottish women doing this job. In ancient times, cloth that had been woven and taken off the loom still needed washing. So it was scrubbed and trampled in tubs of ammonium salts and water. And yes, by ammonium salts, I mean tubs of urine. This process scoured the dirt and impurities and oils and all that greasy sheep residue from the fibers. It whitened and thickened and brightened the cloth. It made it manageable. It made it soft. It made it beautiful. It made it wearable. But this was not a pretty job. And the prophet tells us that this is what the day of the Lord is like. He's like refiner's fire, like fuller's soap. He will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. He will purify the descendants of Levi and refine them like gold and silver. In the prophet's imagination, God's arrival is like a refining crucible. It's like a scouring tub. Heat and chemicals, scrubbing and rinsing. God has an eye for the value wrapped up in all those raw materials. The raw materials that make up our lives. The rough ore, the greasy wool, materials of great worth and purpose. People so full of beauty and potential and possibility, who are weighed down by the dreck and the muck and the residue of life on planet Earth. Now, we're 21st century people, and we buy our cloth that comes from a big factory, I guess. But really, all that means is we have all kinds of clever and intricate ways, complicated ways to make our lives messy. We've developed all sorts of products and technologies that give new shape to old sins. Can you feel it? Can you feel the weight of it? The deep stains of your own mess? Can you see the glimmers of silver that are buried in amidst all of that dull stone of your life? Can you name the varieties of grit and grease that so thoroughly coats the fabric of your life? What would you give to be free of them? What would you give not to be free of them? How many are you still holding on to for dear life? Now, too often during this busy season, we are assaulted with reminders of the ways that we fail. We spend too much. We eat too much. We didn't spend enough time with the right people. We didn't give enough. We're bogged down with the haste and the waste of our crazy lives. And we reply, true, all true. It's so true. And this time of year, you can usually count on a lecture from someone who means well enough. Religion, at its very worst, is a relentless scold, compelling us to try harder to be a nicer person. It's the anti-gospel that says, work harder to stay off the naughty list. Work extra hard to get on the nice list, everybody. But we don't find that here in Malachi. The prophet tells us that this work is not our work. This cleansing work, this scrubbing work, this scouring work is God's work. The God who arrives to make his people shine, to make his gathered faithful bright and white and clean. What if instead, during this Advent season, instead of scolding one another or heaping shame upon ourselves, what if we sat and waited? What if we gave some room for the Spirit of God to work God's holy detergent in our lives? Not because we are going to try any harder, because we already know that we don't have any more try in us. Advent hope means that we press into the current reality, knowing that we need God to show up. We are people living this promise. It's the promise that the raw materials of your lives are of great value. even if they are tied up in the dreck and the muck and the gross, greasy fibers of our lives. The promise is that God comes to make us clean. So what is it? What can you bring to mind that you so desperately want to be rid of? What is it that you need to be freed from? What is the prayer in your heart that asks God to come and scrub in your life with a Costco-sized bucket of OxyClean? Will this hurt? Maybe. Will it be difficult? Possibly. What will your life be like? I can't say. We don't get all the answers at Advent. This is a time of waiting. This is a time of wondering. This is a time of reflection and preparation as we're pressing into the deep mysteries. And I can hardly wait to find out.